Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Is this really who you are, or is this a big image-building campaign? Who is the real Dennis Rodman?
The force of nature that he was undeniable.
He was Jimi Hendrix and Wilt Chamberlain.
Rodman turned the NBA upside down on his head.
You never think back and say to yourself, now Dennis Rodman, which one was he?
Those are a couple of snippets from the Dennis Rodman 30 for 30, which ESPN is going to air tonight at 8 o'clock our time. Talking with the guy who put this whole thing together. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Producer, director, Tom Capistalzi now joining me here. Todd Capistalzi now joining us here on The Score. Todd, thank you so much. I appreciate you jumping on. I want to start with this. What made you think that Dennis Rodman would be a fun research project to do?
Well, you know what, and thanks for having me, but the interesting thing about Dennis now, I think, is, you know, if you're a sports fan, I know all your listeners are probably massive sports fans, but, you know, with what Dennis has done in North Korea sort of recently, he's kind of attracted, now he's got this global following and people know who he is, and, you know, whatever you think of that situation, it's made him sort of this global sort of character, and I think a lot of people, you know, depending obviously on what you think of that situation in North Korea, you know, sort of see him as this caricature, and he obviously in his later life has struggled a little bit with alcoholism and sort of being a present father and all those things. I think a lot of people who don't know the Chicago Bulls and don't know his crazy sort of trajectory and evolution as an athlete sort of just see those things, and they wonder, like, how the hell did this guy, you know, how did Dennis Rodman become Dennis Rodman? And so I think for the doc, my goal was to sort of say, you know, you don't just wake up and, you know, befriend Kim Jong-un one day. There's a slow, steady progression and domino effect into making a person who they are. And I think, you know, Dennis's basketball career was certainly amazing and interesting and crazy. And we wanted to cover all that, but we also wanted to take a deeper look about, you know, how Dennis Rodman became Dennis Rodman.
I got an advanced copy of it, and I appreciate that, so that we could talk more intelligently about it. One of the things that I walked away from it with was that Dennis seems to be a guy that has been looking for validation his whole life, and he still struggles to find validation even when he's getting validation from his mom or from his children.
Yeah, I mean, it's this crazy irony with Dennis, right? That he, and you know, you call it validation, someone else might call it love, you might call it belonging, but you're right. It's just every single step of the way, whether it was his childhood in Dallas, whether it was his college experience in Oklahoma, whether it was with these teams in the NBA, all he wanted was sort of love and acceptance and to feel like he kind of belonged in a place because, you know, and you could break down the psychology of that. And we sort of do in the doc about, you know, his childhood and his father and the lack of love from his mother and feeling like an outcast as a child. But yeah, you're right. It's every single step of the way, even as a 58-year-old, he's looking for that. And it's interesting. We had a screening last night that Dennis showed up to, and at the end of it, there's a Q&A, and you still get that sense. He's got his friends there, and he was so thrilled that, you know, they had come, and kind of from the audience almost seems like he wanted them to love the doc and accept him and understand him. And, you know, so at 58 years old, I think Dennis is still sort of looking for that love and acceptance, and not to spoil the sort of end of the doc, but, you know, he is still looking for that. He's still sort of searching for that love and acceptance that he's been kind of hunting his whole life.
I saw in the interview that he did with Jackie McMullen that he didn't want to watch the documentary before kind of this release. So once he saw it, how did you feel he reacted to it?
Well, what's crazy, it's funny you ask that, is he, you know, we're taking pictures before, you know, the screening last night, and he turned to me, he's like, hey, just so you know, I'm having not trouble, but I think, look, Dennis, there's a lot of stuff in the doc that's probably difficult to watch for him. I mean, it's his whole life, and he's a sensitive guy, and he's still struggling with his relationship with his children and all these things. So he turns to me and he says, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch it even tonight. I'm going to wait and watch it privately when it airs, or, the day after. And I said, I understand that, and, come back for the Q&A, and we'll talk about kind of the process of making the doc. So, he still hasn't seen it as far as I know, and I think he's just waiting to privately, but, he's got so much press, and there's so much pressure on him, and people asking him these questions about the doc, and I think it's overwhelming for him, and I think he's just sort of waiting for the aftermath to sit and watch it and sort of kind of see where it all landed.
Rodman, for better or for worse, the 30 for 30 airs tonight on ESPN at 8 p.m. Todd Capostasi is joining me here to talk about this project. What I loved about your approach to doing this, and I know there are a lot of different ways to do a documentary, you didn't have a lot of easy answers. And you kind of, a lot of times when I've seen 30 for 30s, it kind of reminds me of Behind the Music, where you have this buildup and then there's something bad happens and then there's redemption. Why did you take the route of not looking for redemption at the end of this documentary? In my opinion, maybe you did.
Yep.
It seemed that way when I was watching, that you didn't take the easy way out and say, well, here are all the answers to this after watching it for 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to that is just that there aren't answers quite yet for everything that we kind of pose in the doc. And the great thing about a documentary like this that I was so thankful was we weren't looking at someone who, has passed away. We were looking at someone who could sit in an interview with me and talk about all these things and try to understand, grapple with sort of all these things that have happened in his life. But Dennis doesn't have all the answers to this. He doesn't know how to find happiness quite yet. He doesn't know how to put all these things that have happened in his basketball career and in his life in perspective quite yet. So, the goal of the doc was sort of to say, okay, you've been through all these things, Dennis, and at 58, there's only a few doors left to open in your life. As your career has ended and some of the stuff in North Korea is sort of winding down now, it's time to potentially have that last chapter which is your family. And I think he's still struggling with how to do that. And so we kind of wanted to end the doc on a question of, what's the next 10 years for Dennis Rodman going to be like? Cause we don't know.
How in the world did you get Michael Jordan?
Well, here's the amazing thing about doing a Dennis Rodman film. And look, I've done other docs and other sort of shorter kind of short films on doc subjects, and you do have to convince people a lot to do interviews on touchy subjects or whatever it is. What was amazing about doing this doc on Dennis is everyone, for how volatile he was in the court and some of the sort of problems he had off the court occasionally, his teammates loved him and people love him. They all, it's in the doc, he's a sweet, shy, innocent guy most of the time and sort of misunderstood in a way, but all the players loved him. Everyone was so willing to sort of do this for Dennis, and Michael was the same way. I mean, it wasn't some long process of, oh, please, Michael, Dennis wants you to do it, and this would be huge for the doc. But from what I remember, and, we interviewed him a few months ago now, but it was a pretty quick yes, and Michael really likes Dennis and enjoyed sort of the time. I mean, he also, Michael's a competitor, and Dennis Rodman helped him win those second three titles, so the second three-peat. So, Michael was awesome to have. He gave, I think, some really honest perspective on Dennis's time in Chicago, and it wasn't hard to get him because I think all these guys really love and respect Dennis.
After watching the doc and then watching some footage from the upcoming Jordan 10-parter, I have to ask, are you part of that?
Is Dennis part of that?
No. Are you involved in any way in the Jordan one?
No, so... Jason Hare, who's done a bunch of 30 for 30s, I believe he did. I don't want to botch this, but I believe the Fab Five Michigan 30 for 30. I think he also did the HBO doc on Andre the Giant. He's doing the Last Dance, so he's definitely in capable hands, and he's an awesome director. And I'm just like everyone else. I'm watching these promos, kind of foaming at the mouth for the content because I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, obviously you sat down with Michael Jordan and he has a ton of stories to tell, but if anyone deserved a 10-parter, it would be that guy.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And I think that the sort of concept of it, which I think is is amazing is that they sort of found, you know, I don't know the whole story behind it, but they found these sort of tapes that no one has seen yet in the kind of NBA archives of the last season there and the sort of last couple seasons maybe. So there's going to be, and it's interesting too, they were very protective of that stuff because there's a lot of Dennis content, I'm sure, in those tapes. And, you know, they were like, you know, we found these tapes. These are for The Last Dance. So I just cannot wait to see that too, because there's going to be all this footage that no one's seen before, and it's going to be really compelling stuff.
Was there anything that you didn't get done that you wanted to get done in the 2 hours?
You know, that's a hard question because, I mean, the answer to that is yes, I guess, because, you know, these things, especially now with how content's put out, it's like I 30 for 30s are almost always either, you know, short series, which obviously, you know, we had OJ, which was a multi-part series, and there's the Lance Armstrong series coming out. But, you know, most of the 30 for 30s are either an hour and a half or 2 hours, so you're kind of limited to that. I always say I could have done 6 hours on Dennis because there's just so much. I mean, we lived this crazy. I mean, we literally initially had a 3-minute segment on his relationship with Carmen Electra. We had this amazing 3-minute section on Mark Cuban and his time in Dallas, and Dennis wanted to wear 69 and the NBA wouldn't allow it. And Mark Cuban was pumped about it and printed like 70,000 69 jerseys, and the NBA nixed it. They had to throw them all away. And, you know, there's so many fun little tidbits to be had with Dennis. So yeah, I mean, inevitably when you're sort of confined to that 2 hours, you lose some of that stuff. But, you know, I think we got in, you know, we really, again, wanted to tell a story about the man and the evolution of how Dennis became Dennis, and some of the sort of other kind of tangential stories got lost a little bit. But I think we packed in a lot to the 2 hours.
Rodman 30 for 30, for better or for worse, is tonight at 8 o'clock our time on ESPN. We're talking with Todd Capostasi here on The Score, who put this thing together. So there were two guys that that jumped off the screen for me in their honesty: David Robinson and John Sally. I mean, the clip that's been going around where Sally is asked about whether or not he thought Rodman was going to commit suicide that night in the parking lot, he is right there in your face saying, yeah, that's exactly how I felt.
Yep.
I thought that those two guys came across as being very plain and honest in their feelings about Dennis.
Yeah, I mean, I think John Sally was, you know, Dennis's relationships are interesting because he has a lot of, you know, great friends in the NBA. And as I said, everyone sort of loves Dennis. But, you know, Dennis was a hard guy to get close to because he was so quiet and shy and a different interest than, you know, a normal sort of quote-unquote normal basketball player. But John Sally was his guy. You know, people in Chicago probably remember Jack Haley, who kind of became in San Antonio and I think the first year in Chicago, Dennis's sidekick. And, you know, unfortunately, Jack passed a few years back, so we weren't able to interview him. But John Sally, you know, is that guy. And I think John, to me, was, you know, one of the stars of the doc because, like you said, of his honesty in that situation in Detroit and understanding what maybe, you know, Isaiah maybe didn't know, or maybe what his mom didn't know, that Dennis was at this point in Detroit where things were deteriorating so much that he really was contemplating suicide. And John knew that and wasn't afraid to say it. And that's always obviously great to have in a documentary where you can have these guys that tell you the truth. And as an audience, you know, appreciate getting the truth on these things. That's the whole point of why we put these things together.
Did you grow up a basketball fan?
I did. I'm actually an Ohio native. So I'm from Northeast Ohio, a Cleveland native, and huge basketball fan, huge. Obviously, I saw, what's interesting is LeBron's a year younger than me, so I sort of followed his kind of high school career when I was in high school, and kind of obviously was a fan of his when he was in Cleveland, and was always a Bulls fan growing up. So yeah, I was a huge, huge NBA guy, so it was awesome to be able to kind of dive into Dennis's life.
Did you have to put like a governor on yourself to not make it too basketball-y and maybe more of the human interest side of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard. It's like, you know, I'd be curious everyone's take after they see it. I think there's going to be people who say, oh, man, like, I wish there was more basketball. I wish, you know, the Bull, like, the 3 years in the Bulls are sort of skipped over too quickly and I wanted more of Jordan. You know, I think some people may miss the sort of NBA stuff, and there is a lot of it, especially in, I think, in, you know, Detroit, San Antonio, and Chicago. But there's so much stuff below the surface with Dennis, with his sexuality, with, you know, his experience growing up, his experience you know, facing a lot of racism in Oklahoma. So there's all this really interesting stuff that I think reveals more about him than maybe some of the basketball stuff. And also we sort of said, you know, we had conversations internally about, you know, we're going to have this 10-part Bulls documentary coming out soon. You know, people will get all that stuff in that. So we really wanted to focus on Dennis as a, you know, a human being.
There's part of me that feels like you should do a documentary on his dad.
Philander Rodman, if you can believe it. His father's name is Philander, and he's fathered more than 25 children in the Philippines. So, yeah, he's got an interesting story. And to me, one of the saddest parts in the doc is when, you know, Philander, after having not seen Dennis for, you know, 30 years at the height of Dennis's fame, sort of comes back and wants to be a part of his life and kind of get a piece of that fame. And it's a sad moment for Dennis, I think, in the doc. But yeah, Philander is an interesting character, and I don't know what he's up to now, but I think he's still in the Philippines with, you know, almost 30 kids.
Yeah, and didn't Dennis say that he has close to 50 total?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We felt comfortable in the doc saying over 25. There's been various reports of how many children he's fathered in the Philippines.
Jeez.
I have sort of heard 25 to 30, and then Dennis is obviously with Shirley, has two sisters, so, you know, at a minimum, Dennis is one of 28. So that's a lot of kids for Philander.
What's the thing that you're most proud about now that this is a finished product?
You know, I think what I like about it is initially we were going to start in Detroit, which was, you know, not linear, and sort of then go back to his childhood and then jump back and sort of jump around a little more. And at a certain point we made this decision that, look, yes, maybe it's less sophisticated to do something linear, but I think what the doc really shows well and that I'm proud of, to answer your question, is it shows this domino effect. It shows why, you know, what happened to Dennis at six affected what happened when Dennis was 13, what happened at 20, what happened when he was with the Pistons, what happened, you know, this sort of dominoing effect of causation for Dennis. And I think as a viewer, you're going to understand a lot more about Dennis, and whether or not it's you're angrier at him or you're more sympathetic, I don't know. That's for you to decide. But I think we sort of laid out a pretty clear, you know, picture of who Dennis Rodman is and who he evolved into and why that evolution occurred.
Todd, how did you get so good at Family Feud? You almost won the thing by yourself, 196 points.
I know, 196. But what I have to say is, and if you've seen the clip, and it's the, you know, it's in the celebrity sort of Family Feud, they definitely dumb down the questions for the celebrities. So the last question was name something in a bullfight, and I said bull. So I'm not, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon for coming up with that, but thank you for pointing that out.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show. If you ever have another project that even makes sense for you to come on the show, I would love for you to come back.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And hopefully everyone watches tonight at 8:00.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it. Right. That is Todd Capostasi. He is the director of the Rodman, for better or for worse, 30 for 30. I saw it. Tony saw it. It's really good. Can I just Campy, you saw it too? Were you able to get you? So you saw it as well. Can I just say that there's not a lot of meatball left in me. Okay, there are not a lot of things that still put me on 10. Like as an angry fan, like for in a lot of ways, I have divorced myself from fandom because of what I do for a living. In some ways, that's sad. In some ways, it's not. The thing that still puts me on 10. Are the Bad Boy Pistons. The thing that still makes me angry. Like whenever I see Isaiah Thomas pop up on radio or television in Chicago, I get mad. And I know he's from here, but I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it from him. I had it with him and Lambeer. Like, I don't know why. And maybe it's because of how old I was when that stuff was going on. But
you know what?
I remember Isaiah showed up on Sports Talk Live. And I was just sitting there like, he doesn't deserve a microphone. Screw him and everyone that looked like him.
What was his favorite phrase in that entire doc?
Isaiah's?
Yeah.
I didn't catch it. What?
Unconditional love.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys aren't capable of unconditional love.
No, they're not. No, they're not. I only got respect for John Sally and Buddha Edwards. And Vinny Johnson. I like Vinny Johnson. Vinny is all right. That's it, though.
You know what's funny? I was at the Sky Aces game, and Maggie Hendricks is sitting next to me. He's like, I just can't stand Bill Laimbeer.
I can't.
Who's the coach of the Aces? I'm like, I don't have that connection to those, you know, bad boy Pistons. I'm just, oh, look, it's Bill Laimbeer. But, like, the anger that came across Maggie's face as she was watching him coach that game was wow.
I mean, they were – and Rodman did it, too. And the only reason that we good with Rodman is that he came in here and did a job for 3 years and won three more titles.
And that's the thing, too, is we didn't see Scotty, you know, being interviewed because that was his primary defensive assignment was Scotty Pippen. And they had this contentious relationship when Rodman was a Piston. So he had
It wasn't a contentious relationship, Tony. They beat the hell out of Scotty. Every year, they beat the hell out of Scotty.
Yeah, he was the mark. He's soft. Right. He's the mark.
Until Scotty was like, I've had enough. And it was a growth moment for Scotty. Scotty's my favorite player of all time. It was a growth moment for him where he was like, okay, this is how we playing? Fine. And he got back in the gym. He got stronger. And then he started dishing it out, too. Go look at some of the series between the Bulls and the Pistons. Ugly basketball. The Jordan rule stuff, it still angers me to this day. I don't know how Michael feels about it, but Scotty feels about it. And Scotty's not in the dock, so maybe that lets you know how Scotty feels about it. But I see red when I see those Pistons teams. Oh, yeah, I shouldn't have said that. Because that makes it feel like I'm promoting this year's product, and I'm not. I'm just saying that growing up as a Bulls fan and knowing that the Bulls had the greatest player in the world, seeing him treated the way that he was treated by the Pistons and seeing how Scotty was treated, I wanted to fight. Like that's what it brought out in me. It brought out, well, all right, fine. Chicago versus Detroit. Let's go right now. Like, let's march to Detroit and beat the hell out of Detroit.
I mean, can't they march here?
You want it to be a home game?
I just don't want to go to Detroit.
Detroit's all right, man.
No, I know. Like downtown.
Yeah,
downtown,
you're good.
Fine.
You have a good time in Detroit now.
I'm just too young.
Up until 5 o'clock.
Well,
it's fine.
Sun goes down at different times each day.
Hey, let me tell you what a cab driver told me. I was there to cover a Bears-Lions game. I'm taking a cab from the hotel over to Ford Field. And I was like, you know, downtown looks pretty great. You need to have a conversation with the cab driver. And he stopped the car, turned around, and said, 10 years of work doesn't make up for 50 years of neglect. And I was like, well, okay. Well, all right then. You, sir, are correct because you live here. I've got a couple football things I want to throw your way. If you want to text in, like, I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm alone. I'm a 44-year-old man. I don't want to see Isaiah Thomas. I don't want to see Bill Laimbeer.
That's another thing, too, about Isaiah is, like, I know a lot of people dislike Isaiah, but you got to admit, he's a Chicago legend.
There's no doubt.
Legend. And that's where the mixed relationship is. Like, he is certainly a Chicago product and a Chicago basketball legend. But, man.
Some would tell you that he's the best Chicago product.
And I wouldn't even argue.
I would disagree.
I mean, you can disagree. That's not my fight. I wouldn't argue that.
My fight is that if I see him in the street.
Yeah, it's hard.
There's
going to
be some smoke in the city. That's what my issue is. Back after this on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That was completely apropos. Glad that you are hanging out with me. Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. After I'm done, it'll be McNeil and Parkins. Make sure you check them out from 2 until 6. I was listening to Joe last night, man. You know how much affection I have for Joe Ostrowski, who this week is on every week at night because the Cubs are out west, and then their game on Friday is, what, a 3:05 first pitch? So Joe will be on after that too. And I didn't have Tony go and pull this. I just want to tell you what happened. Joe's on the phone with this guy. This guy calls him up, and he's like, Joe, you're a basher. You bash the Bears. You bash the Cubs. I think I'm doing a really good impersonation of this guy, by the way. And Joe goes, he explains to him how he feels about how the Bears played in the first game. And the guy's like, I agree with you 100%. Then he explains how he feels about the Cubs. And the guy's like, I totally agree with you, but you're still a basher. And I'm like, he can't win. But Joe's doing really cool stuff on the nighttime show for sure. We try to do cool football stuff here a lot. And I love having Anthony Herron. You should listen to Anthony Herron and Jason Goff. They do a fun show on Sirius Big Ten every morning, 6 to 9. Herron, as we lovingly refer to him here, was in studio yesterday. I did a podcast with all the stuff that we did talking about Mitchell Trubisky, which I think is worth your time, how Nagy didn't help him out at all up on LoHo Daily. But we got into a conversation about the way the game went on Thursday and why it looked so awful.
I said it on Dan and Connor's show earlier in the day, Thursday, that guys I know with the Packers organization and other teams around the league have said that they've spent essentially an offseason breaking down the Bears, and specifically in Green Bay, because that's what relates to Thursday night, we saw what some of the folks in Green Bay were telling me be executed, that they felt like they had a bead on personnel groupings, on the scheme that Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich put together, and felt like there were gives, there were tells that they could be able to exploit defensively. And it felt like that was part of what played out on Thursday. The game as a whole, it was good to see. I was unsurprised by how the defense played, but it was great to see now with Chuck Pagano leading the Bears defense, there's tangible evidence that the players in that locker room have that, all right, Chuck can call us into the right situation. We've got the requisite talent to make every play in the book, and we can do that. You know, there was some tempo that Aaron Rodgers threw at them early in the second quarter that threw things off for a bit. Overall, even throughout the course of the rest of the game, he was certainly more effective than Mitch, but the defense was still able to hold their own, where the organization, the roster of the Green Bay Packers on both sides of the ball has been really revamped over the last couple of seasons. And credit to Green Bay, they are a much better, much more talented team now than they were two seasons ago. Personnel-wise, especially offensively, they don't have the personnel that the Bears have, but they certainly have the quarterback. They've got one of the greats in Aaron Rodgers that can find a way to split that difference a little bit, where the Bears overall have a better roster. Offensively, it might have been the least effective game that Matt Nagy's had as a play caller since he's been the Bears head coach. And there were multiple reasons for that, multiple concerns I had with that as it relates to the lack of a run game, especially in the second half. It felt like early on when they came out, and it stuck out to me more in even rewatching the game. In the third quarter, there were some nice moments that Mike Davis had. Not big splash plays that he had breaking off 20, 30-yard runs, but just things that get you ahead of the chains early in a series, where they came out of the locker room looking like, okay, we do want to reestablish the run here, or establish it really for the first time. Didn't stick with that at all. And I was struck by some of Matt Nagy's comments afterwards, just when people were even directly after the game asking him about the lack of even rush attempts, let alone success in the run game. He talked about game flow and some other things that I didn't think necessarily seemed that accurate for why you would get away from the run game to that extent. Not only with it being a four-point game, but a four-point game where, aside from that early phase of the second quarter where Aaron Rodgers threw some tempo at you and floated a pass into the end zone where he exploits the fact that Deion Bush, their least effective coverage safety, is there being boxed out by Jimmy Graham, one of the great jump ball tight ends in NFL history. So that's their one touchdown. Then aside from that, the defense, while some first downs were gained, it wasn't a game that I felt like Matt Nagy should have felt like, this one's going to get away with us because it looks like Aaron Rodgers is really about to get hot. The D did their job, so I think it should have been coached and called offensively more to that tenor, to that temperament, like Matt LaFleur did with Green Bay. He was pretty effective, even though their run game wasn't dominant. He did enough where it keeps you off balance, sets up play action, where Aaron Rodgers can turn his back to that defense and say, all right, let me show off my arm talent.
There's more to that conversation, and it's on LoHo Daily. Like, we go inside the actual mechanism of the Bears offense, and it's good stuff. I love Anthony because of how in-depth he goes. He's fantastic at breaking this stuff down. I was wondering about what Vic Fangio's defense would look like, and then I got an opportunity to see it. Even with those pass rushers, the Raiders last night were able to use quick passes to really do a number on that. By the way,
and the run game.
Joe Flacco's done, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
definitely.
I mean, we kind of knew that, but there was good evidence last night that he's finished with football, right?
I mean, he can't be until Drew Lock gets off IR.
That's a good point. So advantage Bears on that one. Also, did you see the throw that Deshaun made? Fam. I know people are mad. Anthony's one of them. I can't be talking about Patrick Mahomes. I can't talk about Deshaun Watson and then mention that Mitch Trubisky was drafted ahead of both of those dudes. Did you see the two throws at the end of the game that Deshaun made? Oh, my God.
Dude. Oh, so beautiful. And the problem was he scored too quickly.
I don't know. That, to me, that wasn't the problem. The problem was the choice of defense that the Texans decided to play after that. On the third down, was it third and 10, where they kind of only needed 7 yards. You're playing three deep with three safeties 20 yards away from the ball. Drew Brees was like, okay, I'm going to take these 7 yards that you're going to give me, and my guy's going to hit a 58-yard kick. Imagine that. Imagine not being afraid to kick a field goal in perfect conditions. Imagine that.
But, I mean, it's just going to happen now, right, where – like, we try not to think about it in those terms and try and compare Mitch to, you know, Deshaun and Patrick. But
it's hard.
It's hard to do it.
When you see Deshaun Watson make plays where you just sit there with your mouth hanging open, not that Mitch hasn't. Mitch has made a bunch of those plays, too. He's had some runs where you're like, wow. He's made some throws. Even some of the throws he made Thursday. You go, okay, I see it, player, I see it. But Deshaun seems to be, if they can keep him in one piece – that's his. The only question about that dude is is he going to make it through 7 years of the NFL? And I know that's why they went and got Laremy Tunsil, but my goodness, does he take a beating? The most sacked quarterback in the NFL this week.
I actually am okay at being able to separate Patrick Mahomes from it because I go back to the draft conversations and I understand the Chiefs took Mahomes before Watson went, and obviously good on him for it, but. But 98% of the talk was Trubisky or Watson. I've seen so many people say, oh, I was on Mahomes at the time too. No, you weren't. As the best quarterback, everybody said, yeah, he had the best tools.
Right.
But he was just
offense.
Yeah,
and
so raw. A lot of it was so much, like, it was a bad thing that it was all so far out of play. You know, it was off script. So nobody was saying that at the time. I think there might have been like one well-respected draft guy that had Mahomes as the top dude. So I don't have that much of an issue seeing Mahomes, but seeing Watson's the one that I'm like,
yeah. Well. And again, not to relitigate this, but the problem is it's not that you picked Mitch over Deshaun. It's that you traded picks to pick Mitch over Deshaun, when really you could have stayed at that spot. And even if Mitch falls to you, you'd be like, this is the guy that we wanted all the time. If he's gone and you're like, oh, the prize is the guy that had a decorated college career and projects well to the NFL. Okay.
Throwing velocity, though. Remember that? That was throwing velocity.
Didn't have a good spin rate back in the day. We'll hear from Chris Emma at Hallis Hall coming up next here on The Score.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's week two of this new season. Not yet, Chris Emma. I mean, it is week two, but we're not ready for you to throw to the piece yet. I got to set it up. Chris Emma does a great job for us here at The Score, and 670thescore.com. He covers the Bears and does it very well. What I love is that throughout training camp, he provided us with reports every day. And they were so good, we were like, we should just keep it going inside the regular season. So kind of like a wrap of what's happening at Halas Hall to keep you updated in short form. Here's Chris Emma.
It's week two of this new season. After the opening loss last Thursday, up next for the Bears is a trip to Denver to meet with Vic Fangio's Broncos. It will be a matchup of 0-1 teams after the Broncos fell 24-16 last night in Oakland. The Bears know Fangio will be eager to get a win against his former team. Here's linebacker Aaron Lynch.
I know deep down, he's really looking forward to this game. Probably more than his divisional opponents.
The Bears are off from work today before returning to the practice field Wednesday. Yesterday at Halas Hall, the team held a 10-10-10 practice. That included tight end Trey Burden, who missed the opener with a groin strain. Matt Nagy said Burden was moving around well, but was not committal for his status Sunday.
We want to stay optimistic with where he's at and then just kind of feel it out as the days go by. And see, as the week goes by here, really exactly where he's at.
For continued coverage of the Bears, follow me on Twitter at CM670 and log on to 670thescore.com.
You should definitely do that. Emma does a great job with Bears coverage. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, you're going to hear from the afternoon show. I'll get their thoughts on Nyko Horner, the newest Cub. It's Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins. They join me next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.